just let us know that this is not a test. Everywhere the atom bombs are falling, it's the end of all humanity. No more time for singing or for shopping. It's time to face your final destiny. That is the Weird Al Yankovic classic, Christmas at Ground Zero. Arguably my favorite Christmas song of all time. And yeah, I'm a child of the 80s in a sense, a child of the 70s and the 80s. Born in 1970, graduated high school in 1988. So I got a little bit of disco and a little bit of fucking new wave bullshit inside of me, whatever the fuck that means. But yeah, Weird Al always seemed to straddle a couple different art forms, didn't he? Comedy and music. He was a funny guy. It is Tuesday, November the 12th, 2019. And this is your friend Dan in Little Saigon. It's almost 4 a.m. In fact, it'll be 4 a.m. in a matter of seconds. Yeah, I didn't have it. I don't know why I included that Weird Al song. Maybe it's because I continue to be in this weird place, philosophically, existentially, vis-a-vis my neighbors and the human beings of planet Earth, of whom I know there are many that are okay. I don't include myself. But there are so many, I think, that are deeply confused. I truly think that there are people amongst us right now who actually believe that the United States of America is the singular force for good on planet Earth. In fact, I think there are people who believe that God, the Lord in heaven, chose the United States of America. Now that's a neat trick. That was a trick. That wasn't the truth. And in the coming months and years, especially as interesting phenomena like the persecution of the Amish continue to happen, and that's, yes, that's beginning. The Amish people are under attack. In my entire fucking lifetime, I could not imagine America being so shitty, so scummy, that they would decide to pick a fucking Amish community to attack. But the reality is, culturally, we're at a place now where even the fucking Amish are being targeted. And I have no doubt within a matter of months or years that we're going to see the uncovering of some fucking tax scam or drug thingy. I have no doubt that the deep state will do everything it can to destroy those people, because they are an example of a people that worship Christ that don't go around blowing people up. Rare thing these days, really. A lot of Christians, though, they think that the bombs we drop are for Jesus, and I don't think that's the case, folks. I really don't think so. And yeah, it's true. I think Jesus enjoyed having dinner with prostitutes and centurions. That is a true statement. He enjoyed having dinner with tax collectors, prostitutes, and soldiers, aka centurions, right? Romans. But does that really imply that he supported the Roman Empire? Or that he supported taxation? Or that he actually felt that women should be prostitutes? I want y'all to meditate on the lessons of Christ. I think a lot of people mistake Christ's willingness to accept people for Christ's approval of the choices we make. So even though I think the Lord in heaven certainly wants to be compassionate, and as I stated yesterday in one of my podcasts about Veterans Day, if there is a combat veteran in your life that needs to talk about the things they did, you should listen. But I gotta tell you, folks, being willing to be compassionate and being willing to listen should never be mistaken for approval. That's one of the problems with this whole support the troops thing, is that it really isn't just that. It isn't just support the troops. If it was about trying to be kind and compassionate to veterans who make it home and helping them transition back into something like society, that's not the same. That's not really what we're talking about here. Support the troops is a message that gets repeated, which really means support the war. Whatever the war is, I don't know where the war is. According to that stupid YouTube commercial, the troops are stopping arms smugglers. Have you seen that fucking YouTube commercial? I thought YouTube was against false news, fake news. Why would YouTube allow a fucking commercial showing the army and its primary mission to stop, excuse me, arms smugglers? You remember the pictures of all those shiny Toyota pickups with a mounted, 7.62 NATO and all the fucking guys holding brand new M16s, 5.56 NATO back in the spring of 2014? Whole bunch of Toyota Tacomas looked fresh off the fucking factory floor. If the United States military stopped arms smugglers, it would have to attack the United States government. Yeah, that's how fun this game is, folks. First topic. What if the potato? And keep in mind, I'm Irish, so I love potatoes. What if the potato contains a curse? What if when Pizarro attacked the Incan Empire in the early part of the 16th century, what if Pizarro triggered an ancient curse created by Inta after the usurpation of Atahualpa? Inta, the sun god of the Incan people. What if Inta placed a curse on the potato? From Peru all the way to Ireland, the curse of the potato has followed mankind. What if the potato contains an ancient curse? Think about diabetes and all the fucking metabolic disorders and how sick people are getting. What if this all goes back to what Pizarro did, usurping Atahualpa? I really don't know, folks. I gotta say, I like potatoes, and they seem to be a very sturdy kind of plant, right? I mean, easy to grow, easy to harvest. Very tasty, if you ask me. The potato is so tasty that, well, frankly, even people I know that are into keto, like street protein, even the folks into hardcore keto, I still see them eating the potato, and their claim is, well, at least a potato. is gluten-free, right? Potatoes, they don't contain gluten, do they? I think it's just wheat, right? So that's another thing about the potato. It's gluten-free, baby. Anyways, I think that's a silly topic, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe the potato doesn't have a curse. That's stupid. Next topic, the architecture of Seattle. Now, one of my listeners noticed a comment I made about riding the 132 or the 131 or the 120 or the 121 from downtown Seattle to Burien. Yeah, I've ridden these buses to Burien, and you'll go through the industrial zones of Seattle. And you'll come across this industrial architecture, and one of the buildings that you'll see, the first thought that occurred to me, and I mentioned this in the podcast, was firing squad. Now, I had forgotten, because I'd taken architectural history a long time ago, that the firing squad style of industrial construction is also known as urban brutalism, which, frankly speaking, fits perfectly. I love it. Brutalism, that's what I saw. I saw a bunch of guys getting ready to shoot a bunch of people. That was the facade of somebody's place of work. But I gotta tell you, I don't want to retread that topic. This isn't about brutalism. This is about an architectural style that may have already been defined or categorized. And interestingly enough, your good old friend Uncle Dan lives in this style. Thank you. What is this new architectural style that you'll see all over Seattle? That you'll see amongst all the corners of the creeping crumulus? What is this architectural style that pops up and grows everywhere like Candida Surprise? I live in a building that technically contains only micro studios. Now, if you want to know what a micro studio is, Twinkle Toes, a micro studio is about, I don't know, 150, 200 square feet. It's big enough. It's a little bigger than that. Bottom line is, though, it's kind of like a college dorm room. I've got a bath. I do have a bathroom and a shower. It's not like it isn't super terrible, but I will say this. I've been to people's homes. People have actually invited me to their homes, even their fancy homes. And usually their fucking closets are bigger than where I'm living now. What is this bizarre fucking architecture I speak of? Well, it is what I call maybe it's shambles or crapola. I don't know what the proper name is. I spoke about the novel Atlas Shrugged yesterday. There's another part of Atlas Shrugged where I think it's Francisco D'Anconia has a special fucking business deal with a company in Mexico. I think it's some journalists go to investigate this fucking mine that he builds with the Mexicans. And when they get there, they find that it's abandoned, it's a shanty town, it's cardboard, it's nothing, that it dried up and blew away. Now, I don't want to get into all the specifics of Atlas Shrugged, but if you ask me, the buildings they build in Seattle now are designed to be destroyed. They are designed to catch fire and blow away. Okay, I live in a building that if it was hit by a 150 mile per hour wind, I think, something, and again, Dan, you say, well, that would never happen in Seattle. Well, maybe not. But I'm pretty certain that somewhere over 100 miles an hour, my building starts to move off its foundations. That's how solidly built my fucking building is. And I'm thinking that all these other shitty buildings that they're putting up in about 15 seconds all over the place, that I don't even know who's going to live there. I mean, again, unless they intend to ship in what's left of India and China into King County, then I suppose, right? Oh, Dan, you're a racist. No, not really. I just have this sense that people are being fucked with. And one way that powers that be love to fuck with people is the kind of what I would call synthetic diaspora. And the synthetic diaspora is where the powers that be, usually scumbags like George Soros through open societies, they create chaos. And lucky them, they've got Israel and the United States to help them create chaos. And they use this chaos to move people around. They use the poverty, they use the quote-unquote comparative advantage to move people around. That way, nobody's too connected to anybody else. Way the fuck easier to control. Kind of like the mantra they told me when I was a kid, go away, go away, go away, young man, leave your home and go away. Leave your home, go to college, go see the fucking world. Think about, you know, that great movie, It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah, it is kind of a message of a hometown person, but in a way it's not. In a way, it's the message of a person that wanted to leave hometown, but never fucking got to. And that has been that common fucking message my whole adult life. Okay, you should be willing to move anywhere for a job. Isn't it fucking funny, though? And excuse me for this rant off of architecture for a minute. But isn't it fucking funny, though, that when Trump threatens SALT and that state and local tax exemption, when Trump threatens SALT, which is one of the ways like pro football players, actors, and other rich fuckers can pretend they're really good people while basically not paying their local and state taxes. Okay? This is another reason why places like California and New York City and other places can have the illusion of prosperity despite the fact that they have ridiculous tax codes. SALT. State and local tax exemption. You need to understand this. Because back when this issue came up, just like, what, a couple fucking years ago, people were bitching and crying about it. Bitching and moaning. I'm a billionaire. How dare you have me move? And these same motherfuckers during the Obama administration, okay, would tell people in their Midwest crystal meth hells that all they need to do is pack up their shit like modern day Okies and take a good old drive to the West Coast and they'll find a fucking job. And oh, by the way, I wonder where all the fucking homeless people came from when that message was sent out. You beginning to connect the fucking dots, people? The places people live in Seattle, these buildings, they're shanty towns. They are nothing compared to how we lived when I was younger. Yeah, a couple decades ago. People I knew with similar backgrounds, similar educations, they lived a much better life, a way less stressful life, way less tracked, way less monitored, and I would say the building standards were better. The shit they're building today is really built to be destroyed. Just like communities, just like connections between real people. And part of this is what I would call that synthetic diaspora. And if you don't know what a diaspora is, think about it as the scattering of a people. That's what happened to the people I knew when I grew up. That's what happened to Washington State, folks. That's what fucking happened to Seattle, if I may be so fucking bold. This used to be a really cool town. Not so fucking douchey, filled with a lot of cool people. But then the message went out. When was it? I don't know. When I was in fucking high school, real adventurous young people They leave town, they go to whatever the big city is, and if it's not Seattle, blah, 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 then it must be someplace else. And oh, by the way, while you're gone, someone's gonna take your spot, and you will never have a home to go back to. I live in a building where if you were to fire a 5.56 round, and that's a standard NATO carbine round, think of it as 22 caliber on steroids. If you were to fire a 5.56 round at my building, this may sound like an exaggeration, but I think just a regular metal jacketed round would probably go through the whole building. In fact, it would be murder to use a pistol round in a building like this that wasn't a hollow point or frangible. If you used a standard 9mm round in a building like this that wasn't hollow point or frangible, you would be putting people's lives at risk every time you tried to defend yourself. That's how fucking well built this fucking building is. That's how well built our society is now, folks. You need to understand, please listen. That these things are not randomly disconnected. They are totally connected. They are totally related. Our money, our relationships, the way we build, all of it has been debased. Our moral capital. And when I say moral capital, I don't know if the United States ever had any, but assume we did. Our moral capital is gone. So, yeah, the architecture in Seattle represents Seattle and America pretty fucking well. Crappy, shanty, big box, and about 20 seconds from drying up and blowing away. And it does make me think, folks, like sometimes I wonder if. If you ran the world and you had no fucking soul, which means you were kind of like Ted Bundy, but you also knew that some terrible calamity was coming, wouldn't you kind of get the word out? You know, buddy, that new housing complex that you're building downtown? I wouldn't build it out of stone. I wouldn't build it out of steel. I would build it out of sand. Because there is no future, buddy. That multi-family unit housing fucking cube you're building not too far from Capitol Hill, one of the 20, one of the 2000. Don't use any fine materials. We need those for the bunkers, buddy. The hoi polloi can live in paper. In fact, the hoi polloi needs to live in paper. How can it be easy to burn it all down if we don't build it out of paper? Next topic, the draft. Let's talk about the draft, or what's sometimes called conscription, and that is the involuntary service of some citizen or denizen or wanderer, the involuntary addition of that human to some military force. The draft, the conscription. They tell you to show up, you show up. If you don't, they send people for you. The draft, I think ceased to exist as we know it in 1972 or 73. I think roughly about that time. It was about the same time that the United States military switched to a all-volunteer model. Now, as I've said in the past, it's voluntary up to a point, which means technically the contract you sign with the military is a legal slave contract. Once you've signed it, they can do all kinds of nasty shit to you, and that shit might never end, especially if you do military intelligence. Maybe Uncle Dan will talk about why he chose not to do military intelligence, even though he was slotted to do it. They can fuck with you till the end of time, and if you decide that it's gonna be really cool to get clearances, oh, I can see all the shit. Yeah, you'll get to see all the shit. That shit you'll take with you, you can never talk about, and if you fuck up about it, yeah, they'll throw you in jail. But it's true, we don't have a draft. We have selective service now. If there is an emergency, they call it selective service. If there is some national crisis, they can call up the people, to go fight the enemy, whoever the fuck that's gonna be this time around. Probably China, right? Probably Russia. Probably pointless. Probably billions of people will die. I'm an anarchist, which means, technically speaking, not only do I think war is bullshit, but I can't imagine organized involuntary violence without the existence of government. I have no doubt that in a realistic world, there will always be violence. It's impossible to avoid human failure. People have free will. Nobody's perfect. So, in any world, any possible world that would be remotely humane, you will always have random acts of violence. That is just reality. I'm so sorry, people, that this may seem confusing, but no one can protect you from people going crazy. All you can do is have a healthy enough society that the number of people that go crazy stays at kind of a low-level background noise. In fact, you don't even notice it for the most part. But war, fucking with people, gaslighting people, telling them that the enemy is the German, or the enemy is the fucking communist, or the enemy is the fucking Russians, or the fucking Iraqis, or the Iranians, or ISIS, or Al-Qaeda. Which fucking week is it? North Korea? Which week is it? Tell me the week and I'll tell you who the fucking enemy is. Lying to people, fucking with people, manipulating people, and then forcing them to go off and kill other people they don't know, and frankly have no reason to kill. And in all likelihood, the people that end up killing each other in war are people that come from mostly the same sectors of society. Oh, I'm sorry. Which means, and again, I don't want to be all Marxist about this, but since the Marxists have gone sideways in America, I'm going to use their bullshit against them. Which means that these soldiers, in terms of their class consciousness, have way more in common with each other than with their fucking rulers. In 1917, if the United States had not gotten involved in World War I, there was a really good chance that the German army and the French army and the British army would have revolted. Because even though there were lots of people at the higher levels who loved the fucking war and knew that one day soon we would win, the little people realized it was a giant fucking evil monkey fuck. It was monstrous, it was disgusting, it was quite literally the translation of industrialization into murder. That, as stated, on the first day of the Battle of the Somme. First day. And the Battle of Somme was just one of the nasty battles of World War I. Day one, the British soldiers lose 50,000 people dead. By the end of that fucking battle, as stated in the past, there would be some towns in England where no young men would return. Ever. For that period of time. They'd have to wait a decade or two. The young men had been not decimated. Decimation, folks, for your fucking information, means 10%. No, no, no. World War I wasn't that fucking kind. It wasn't decimation. It was obliteration. By 1917, every fucking soldier on the Western Front knew this. If the United States had avoided that fucking stupid-ass war, and oh, by the way, Armistice Day, November the 11th, yeah, that's a fucking celebration of that fucking monstrosity called World War I. Add that to the reasons why I'm a bit sketchy on that fucking holiday. That being said, if the United States had simply minded its own fucking business, there is every chance that those armies would have revolted. World War I would have ended in 1917, which means earlier. And I would argue there would have never been a World War II. Because in that kind of peace, the right people would have made the peace. Let us go backwards in time. To another period of time. Way, 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 way fucking back. The last religious war in Western Europe ended in 1648. In 1648, there was something called the Peace of Westphalia. It ended the 30 Years' War. The 30 Years' War, other than the 14th century crisis, the 30 Years' War was a huge atrocity for Western Europe. 20 to 30% of the population was killed. By the way, that is also more than a decimation. That is 20%. That is 30%. That's not just the fucking Weasley 10%. 10%. 10% ain't shit, folks. Americans, oh my God, so many of you, including myself, have so much to learn about pain. We think we have pain. I live here in Little Saigon in a fucking flop house, for all intents and purposes, by quote-unquote middle-class American standards. I live better than 80% of the people on planet Earth. These are things you need to start processing, folks, on a separate topic. The draft is monstrous. War is monstrous. But I'm going to, before I leave this topic, I'm gonna tell you something about the draft. There's one thing about it I like. In fact, I would say I would modify the concept of the draft. I would call it unanimous consent war, which means that a just society, if it ever declared war, every single adult citizen would have to agree. If every adult citizen does not agree, there is no fucking war. And here's what's more fucking important, in my opinion. Every one of those adult citizens has to put their fucking name into a jar, which means every one of them could be selected to go kill somebody. At least they had equal chances, right? Which isn't that different from the way the draft worked. The draft was a kind of, maybe not lottery system, but in a way it very much was. The reason why I'm willing to entertain the concept of the draft as an anarchist is because of the way that we have abstracted war. We have abstracted war to the point that everyday code monkey, middle class, quote-unquote, white-collar scumbag Xbox players can play their fucking first-person shooter games, and they can pretend that war is cool and fun. It's not. Another thing they don't consider is the moral tragedy, the moral cost. We heap upon the soldiers and the sailors and the airmen and the Marines, we heap upon them the moral cost. They take the moral cost. We don't take it. You pay your taxes, you do your little voting game, but you don't actually have to go to Iraq and kill somebody. So that moral cost, which isn't even just the financial cost, you're also putting that on somebody else too. You have a proxy. You're going to let someone else carry the fucking burden. And then you're going to pretend that supporting the troops makes up for it. It doesn't, folks. It really, really doesn't. No amount of supporting the troop will ever put you in the same moral position as some grunt killing somebody, or God forbid, accidentally killing innocent people, which, yes, happens in war, folks. No matter how cautious you are, no matter how principled you are, if you're throwing tons and tons of ordnance downrange and it's not a training facility, you're going to kill innocent people. Yeah, you'll kill bad guys too, huzzah, huzzah, but usually the bad guys have men, women, and children around them who, you know, are technically just bystanders. And of course, you can adopt the position, well, damn, in war there are no bystanders. Add that to the list of reasons why I think war is horrific bullshit. You've just told me, you have just admitted when you say shit like that, and there are people out there who will say it, damn, you know, collateral damages, accidental casualties of war. These are human beings, folks. We've lost what? You know, maybe, I don't even know if we're at 10,000 yet, but we've lost far less in the wars on terror in terms of casualties dead than pretty much any of our previous wars. Vietnam, Korea, there were more killed, right? So that's pretty bad. And then you've got, you know, 9/11, that's almost 4,000 people, you know, 3,000, 4,000 people. So let's say the grand total up to now of American soldiers, American civilians killed, is somewhere in the vicinity of 15,000. Let's just say that number. I think that's high, but let's say it is. Because if you add in the suicides, I bet it's 20,000. Since 9/11, we have probably killed conservatively 500,000 men, women, and children who had nothing to do with 9/11. If you vote for the fucking wars, and oh, by the way, it doesn't matter who you vote for, every time you vote, you're voting for the wars. If you vote for the wars, you don't have to carry that burden. But there are soldiers and sailors and airmen and marines and some mercenaries who have to carry that burden for you. War is terrible. We should not do it. It's stupid. It's terrible. I think we should have a general consent rule. I mean, again, I don't believe in government, but if you're going to do this bullshit, everybody should agree and everybody should have to put up or shut up. If you're not willing to do it, if you're not willing to put your life on the line, and I don't care how old you are, I don't care if you've got fucking back issues, there are lots of jobs in the Army where you can sit on your ass and stare at a screen all day. Believe me, I was an officer. I can find you a fucking job you can do, even from a fucking wheelchair. And here's the fun part. If you have to sit in that fucking wheelchair anywhere within that combat zone, you get to become a target too. You get to see the blood and the gore. You get to smell it. Yeah, that shit has a smell to it. I've never smelt it. I've only read about the smell. It sounds a lot like the creepiest place you'd ever accidentally fall into if you went into a universe created by H.P. Lovecraft. That's what the smell is supposedly like. The worst fucking nastiest corpse smells you can imagine, and it never gets cleaned up. That was the Western Front in World War I, folks. It wasn't just bullets, it wasn't just murder and blood. It was rotting corpses. You really think that they got all the fucking bits and pieces during the truces when they went to gather bodies? Do you actually believe that bullshit? No, a lot of bodies just stayed everywhere. A lot of bodies stayed scattered and torn and shredded up, and they simply rotted. A lot of people were eaten by rats. That's also war. Next topic, sadly, on a similar vein. In July of 1950, technically just a few days, really a week or two after technically the Korean War began. If you consider the start of the Korean War, the North Korean invasion of South Korea, the violation of the truce line, then yeah, July 1950. In July 1950, the US government sent a force to Korea to stop the invasion of the North Koreans. It was called Task Force Smith. It was essentially a battalion of troops. In fact, it was a light battalion, armed with a lot of light equipment, including light bazookas. Bazookas that were never effective, really, against anything other than a Japanese tank. And when I say Japanese tank, the Japanese did a lot of things during World War II that were innovative. Their tanks were not. Their tanks were really quite shitty. So, yeah, the good old fucking bazooka was great against the Japanese tank, not so good against the T-34. And that's what, the North Koreans had. Lots and lots of fucking Soviet T-34s. Now, I'm not going to go into all the gruesome details of a light battalion, poorly armed, poorly supported, facing off one or two North Korean divisions, or between 10 and 20,000 troops. I'm not going to explain what happens when a light infantry battalion engages an armored division. But you can figure that shit out for yourself, can't you, folks? Task Force Smith was a bloody failure. In fact, it was probably known to be a failure. They probably knew when they put those fucking troopers on that fucking highway that there was no way in hell they could stop the North Korean division in front of them. No way in hell they would stop the North Koreans. Not one fucking chance. But there is a reason to do shit like that, folks, okay? There's a real good reason to do shit like that, folks. You do shit like that, you create a human speed bump when you want to get people to support a war. Because here's the thing, it doesn't really matter what caused the Korean War if you can show that the bad guys, killed a bunch of your good guys. And then you put it in the newspapers, holy shit, the good Americans standing up to the evil communists. Totally destroyed. Holy fuck. But here's the thing, folks. As someone who studied this subject, I can tell you Task Force Smith was set up to fail. It was never supposed to succeed. The people guilty for that slaughter, the generals that sent them there. That's the truth. Now, why am I talking about this? Well, there's this whole thing about Trump moving troops out of Syria, which seems like a special kind of bullshit. Except for the oil. Except for the oil. Yeah, except for the oil. We are leaving Syria, but we're going to leave forces to guard the oil. Let me do another little historical segue. In 1954, at Dien Bien Phu, the French army, the French Foreign Legion was defeated by a bunch of, North Vietnamese people, basically the Vietnamese fighting back against the imperialists, what would become the North Vietnamese Army, but essentially the Viet Cong. Now, why did I bring this up? Because Dien Bien Phu, Task Force Smith, frankly, I would add, good old Custer, what happened to Custer? At Little Bighorn, I would add that too. And this fucking let's put troops around the oil rigs because that's what the troops are be. We have troops there, right? We're leaving troops behind. They're going to guard the oil. Folks, one of the biggest tactical, strategic, and operational innovations of the last 100 years has been the adoption of this concept of maneuver warfare, which means that technology allows you to not sit and wait to be killed. World War I was in part a meat grinder because maneuver warfare just kind of froze up as an ability. defensive technology had really advanced. Offensive technology hadn't really made the same advances, at least not yet. By the end of World War I, the tank, the attack aircraft, and properly synchronized combined arms warfare, these things would be tweaked to the point that by the end of World War I, you're getting close to something we would call modern contemporary maneuver warfare, combined arms warfare. The key thing about maneuver warfare is that specific places are fucking irrelevant. They are. They're irrelevant, okay? Up to a point. Like, yes, there are reasons to take a strategic location. There are reasons, for example, in warfare, to take resources. But what you never do, ever, 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 is treat a resource point as a point of defense, which means that don't fucking cluster your troops around every fucking thing you think is worth something. Why? Because it's called an artillery target. There are too many easy ways to bring in indirect fires on people. You can do mortars, you can do rockets. Those fucking Shiite and the various little terrorist groups throughout the Middle East, they love their Stalin organs, aka Katyushas. They make all kinds of Katyushas. The point is, they can fashion Katyushas all the live long day, and as you're sitting there guarding the fucking oil, you can be dodging rockets. And you can say, well, Dan, they'll just put in a Patriot system. Really? You think that's what's going to happen next? As a former air defense officer, I can tell you, in terms of contemporary aircraft and UAVs and drones, Syria is a postage stamp, which means that the air corridor management is probably crazy as fuck right now. You've got Russians, you've got Syrians, you've got Americans, and who the fuck knows who else, Turks and other fucking NATO ash and trash, flying combat aircraft, surveillance aircraft in areas where at, I don't know, 500 knots, you probably cross the country in about 45 minutes or less. I truly haven't done the numbers, but the point is, these craft go so fast that if you fuck this up, you start a war. So yeah, I don't really see them putting Patriot missile batteries around these fucking oil platforms. I don't even know if they'll put any air defense, because why? You're taking a risk. But maybe they will. Maybe they'll have, you know, lots of guys with Stinger missiles. Maybe they'll move in a fucking Patriot, the Iron Dome. Maybe they'll realize how useless it is against regular old-fashioned artillery. Because here's the thing. You might be able to shoot down a rocket, but you're going to run out of those missiles. You might be able to do it, but you will. And you'll still have the artillery. What are you going to do? Shoot down the artillery shell? You going to do that? You going to send out the Air Force to take out all the Syrians and all the terrorists who attack you? I don't know why Trump is doing this, because one of the arguments is that, well, the oil is irrelevant. The cost of being there is greater. I truly don't know the calculus. It could be the case that this is just a silly, crazy fucking thing. That's just another example of the mental illness of empire at the end. But whatever the reason is, it is not a good idea to use maneuver forces at fixed points of defense, okay, where you don't have additional maneuver forces. You can do the hammer and the anvil, which means that you can create an anvil as a fixed point of defense, but you need a hammer, and if you don't have a hammer, that anvil is just a fucking weight, you know, a weight connected to your fucking neck dropped in a fucking river. The hammer would be like an armor brigade or an armored division. If you had an armored division plus a fixed point of defense, you could do the hammer and the anvil. And theoretically, with a little bit of close air support, you could keep that shit going for years. But without a maneuver force outside of your perimeter, you are fucked. You will be cut off. You will be hammered day and night. And yeah, you can call in the Air Force and you can have them do their nasty shit. And I promise you, okay, in that little tiny airspace, a lot of sparks will start flying. So I truly don't know why Trump is holding on to the oil. It does not make a lot of military sense. I don't even know if it makes economic sense. But what I can say, if you want a casus belli that is propaganda based for war, if you want to convince a bunch of people that we've got to make up for the slaughter, there's nothing better than having a bunch of people set up to be slaughtered. Think about Dien Bien Phu in 1954. What if, and this is a big fucking what if, because, I'm not General Giap, Colonel Giap, whoever, Giap, Giap, I can't even pronounce that fucking name. But what if that general had made a different kind of decision? Like, instead of slaughtering the French, and completely almost destroying them, what if he'd simply very quickly just said, you know what, leave your weapons and leave? Instead of just being so brutal against the French, why wouldn't they have just, backed off a little? Because I think the attack on the French at Dien Bien Phu, I think it was so brutal, so catastrophic to not just the French ego, I gotta say, to the good old-fashioned white world ego. It was pretty fucking catastrophic. One wonders what would have happened next. I don't know, it's weird, but I almost think that it might have been a kind of justification for the United States getting involved in Vietnam. Like, oh shit, look what those nasty communists did to the French. The French are nice, right? Anyways, this hour of the Little Saigon Report is brought to you by Mary Lynn's Happy Ending Massage. At Mary Lynn's Happy Ending Massage, you will never be disappointed. Mary Lynn's Happy Ending Massage Paradise Salon is located not far from Jackson Street in Little Saigon. Mary Lynn loves new clients. She loves them a long time. For $50, you get a 30-minute massage. For $100, you get the massage with a happy ending and full release. So come on down to Mary Lynn's. Tell them Uncle Dan sent you. Mary Lynn has always been kind to Uncle Dan. At Mary Lynn's Happy Ending Massage with full release, you will learn to touch your feminine self. So go on down to Mary Lynn's. They're open 24/7 and twice on Sundays. Go on down there and hook up with one of their massage artists, their massage technicians. They are scientists in the field of massage and ancient Asian oils and those forgotten pleasures of the dark world so long ago. Next topic, right? Yeah, Mary Lynn's happy ending Massagey Palace with full release. I just want to say this before I go. Has really saved my life. I have this weird statement as a note. It's a weird statement. It's kind of a note to myself for this podcast. And this is how maybe I should end the podcast. Maybe that would be wise. I don't know. I just don't know. I thought, you know, if you imagine for a second that there is no God, but the universe were somehow inherently just. And I don't believe that. I believe the universe is just, and I believe there is a God. But I want you to imagine as an atheist that there was something intrinsic to physical reality that allowed for a kind of instant karma. What if the orca whales were allowed once a year, randomly, to steal a human baby? I know you're going to say, Dan, that's monstrous. Why would we allow the orcas to steal a human baby? Well, we kind of did that back in the day. Right here in the Puget Sound area, they would go out and they would hunt for baby orcas. They'd usually kill a few whales in the process, and they would take some babies, and assuming that the child orca that they took didn't die, they would send that baby orca to SeaWorld or Sea whatever, go see the fucking orca in a big old fucking bathtub. Go see Droopy Fin, right? Go see Droopy Fin. And that fin droops in nature. No, it doesn't, folks. That Droopy Fin represents a lot of fucking sadness. But what if once a year, randomly, we selected some random babies in our own country that we tossed to the fucking orcas? Now, yeah, that's monstrous. I'm not proposing it. But I'm just trying to get people in contact with the shit they do. That is human shit that we have done in the past. I don't believe it still happens. I think that we no longer do that. But that is actual human bullshit. And it is not ancient fucking history. I was a kid when that shit still happened. Fishermen going out and stealing orca babies. Next topic. Really the last topic, right? In fact, the last topic is really a quote I came up with the other day. I don't know if it's original to me, but if it is, whatever. Here is something you need to know about the Irish people. Here's something that will help you understand the Irish people. The Irish will stubbornly fail. We will heartily not succeed until the bitter end. We Irish will work very hard at personal catastrophe, self-destruction, self-abasement, until the bitter end. So on this Tuesday, November the 12th, 2019, if you're an Irishman like me, then I know you're prepared just like me to fail. right up until the bitter end.